If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where we're previewing the 2023 National Road Race Championships, which takes place this week in Redcar in Cleveland. The racing begins on Wednesday, June the 21st, with a time trial on a course that British Cycling describes as, quotes, one of the fastest courses the National Championships has ever seen. 2 days later, the action shifts to Redcar Town Centre and Esplanade for a seaside crit with World Tour pros. And on Sunday, June the 25th, the championships will reach their climax with road races for men and women on a relentlessly undulating course that will test even riders with a Grand Tour in their legs. We'll hear from British Cycling Sport and Participation Director Jonathan Day, the man leading the team behind this championships, and learn why the racing is only part of a larger ambition to make cycling a year-round activity in Redcar and Cleveland. And we'll hear from Larry Higmott, the founder and editor of Brother UK sponsored VeloUK.net, who's covered countless national championships and has already driven the road and time trial courses in Cleveland. He's even walked the circuit course in Redcar Town Centre and, with barrier lines accepted, gained a working knowledge of a course that will bring domestic crit specialists, world time trial champions, and World Tour road captains wheel to wheel. Now joining me to discuss the course, the contenders, and the wider economic, commercial, and social significance of a successful Nationals is my co-host, Phil Jones, the Managing Director of Brother UK. Phil, thank you very much indeed for joining me today.
Hi, Tim. Yeah, great to be here, and how exciting we've got the Nationals ahead of us.
Well, it's peak season now, isn't it? The races are coming thick and fast. Well, before we go any further, Phil, just a quick chapeau for that interview with John Dutton, British Cycling's new CEO. I think you got the scoop there, didn't you? The first proper interview with a man who'll have a significant influence on the development of British cycle sport in at least the short to medium term, and who has already been a very visible leader for British cycling.
Yes, I've had lots of people contact me to say they really enjoyed listening to that podcast, and also that I put some of the key questions to him that actually they wanted to put. And for the first interview, naturally, we weren't doing a huge deep dive because John is very new to the role and, of course, new to the sport. So, of course, there's a limit really as to how much you can push him. But I will actually say that he really seems to be getting on with things, and we can see already since his arrival the big statement around participation of transgender athletes in British cycling events, and I see CTT have also followed suit now with an almost mirrored policy for their own events. So, you know, fair play to him, he's clearly getting on. And if you haven't yet listened to that podcast, I would highly recommend you do in order to better understand perhaps some of the future intent for this sport that we love.
Well, one of the phrases, Phil, that jumped out of the recording at me was John's assertion that he, quotes, walks towards challenges. And he's certainly doing that in the early days of his tenure. Definitely worth checking out that interview. That's Brother UK Cycling Podcast, episode 36. It's available on all leading podcast platforms and, of course, on the Brother UK website. Well, we are now mere days away from the 2023 National Road Championships in Redcar and Cleveland, and who knows more about that than Jonathan Day, British Cycling Sport and Participation Director, and the man who's led the team behind the championships. Jonathan's title, I think, Phil, is pretty revealing. Captures the dual ambition, I think, of the National Championships. Yes, it offers the most significant date on the domestic calendar, but it's also a halo event to inspire year-round cycling activity in the host region. Now, Jonathan and his team operate in a very similar fashion to our colleagues at Sweet Spot in going out and trying to secure a host venue, and of course, they face very similar challenges. Like Sweet Spot, British Cycling must secure a host likely to be facing the same economic headwinds that are buffeting every organisation in this country, whether that be private or public. The early indications of sporting success are three cracking courses and world-class lineups in every discipline and age category. And I guess the clearest indication so far of the year-round participation that they're aiming for is the addition of the East Cleveland Classic to this year's National Road Series calendar. The domestic peloton will return to the region on October the 1st. So without further ado, let's have a listen to Jonathan and get the inside line on the logistical, commercial and social background to these championships.
We go out and try to seek a host and we approach the local authorities directly. But clearly we give that quite a bit of thought, particularly around the opportunities and the potential impact that this event will have in that host area. Clearly, major events are important, but also in more recent times, they've been a little bit more challenging to land with host authorities, particularly in terms of stretch budgets, etc., off the back of the cost of living crisis, so on and so forth. In addition, we've got to think about the sporting elements as well, in particular topography and the delivery potential of those three events. But the ambition of the host is super important. There's nothing better than working with a host that really wants the events and will do everything to support them. And that's absolutely what we've got this year with Redcar and Cleveland and Council. I just said to someone earlier this morning, actually, how the support has just been incredible so far across every area of this event. We'll start at Wednesday in terms of time trial delivery, and then very quickly you bump into one and then you're bumping out into the next straight away, really. So once Wednesday's done, we're really good job of that. Then Thursday we'll be heading to Redcar and start to get the plans in place ready for that delivery on Friday. And then out the back of Friday evening, late on no doubt, we'll be in Saltburn from first thing Saturday morning, and then that will continue. Put it in perspective, even just from our terms of officials, police, NEG, volunteers, bike riders, team personnel, etc. In amongst that entourage in itself, it's probably about 500 people. Just that alone, without starting to think about fans, spectators, other road users, communities, businesses that are affected, etc. It's a big deal, but as I say, it's an absolute privilege to do what we do. We care deeply about it and about the sport, and we can't wait to get stuck in. Can't come soon enough, if I'm honest. As we said at the start, my role is sport and participation. Our regional teams have been working really closely with Redcar and Cleveland Council. And as part of our wider work, the kind of social impact, social purpose is a big part of what we're about. The great thing is that these kind of major events, flagship moments, if you like, provide the opportunity to open up that discussion about year-round activation, community engagement, legacy, whatever you want to call it. But essentially, just an opportunity to look at ways to work with and partner with a host to deliver year-round activity and not just a bike race. The bike race provides the opportunity for that discussion. It really provides the inspiration for the local people. It's then about how we can continue that discussion and look at partnering with them to deliver year-round activation through our participation programme. So those discussions are very much in train with Redcar and Cleveland Council.
Well, great to hear there, Phil, from Jonathan. And as we mentioned, his title tells a story, doesn't it? Sport and Participation Director. Those are two sides of the same coin. A major sporting event intended to inspire year-round cycling activity in the host region. What scale, Phil, would you expect the challenge to be in this current economic climate where local authorities are already under huge pressure just to deliver core services?
Yeah, absolute kudos to Redcar and Cleveland Local Authority for backing the championships. Of course, it will mean they will have to invest some money. There's a huge amount of red tape and administration that you need to go through to host a national championship, of course. The road closures, crowd safety, all of these different things. There's a huge amount of logistic and administration effort, as well as funding needed. So clearly in North Yorkshire, they are very keen to get far more of us over there riding the roads of Redcar and Cleveland, but of course also to have their own population enjoying more active travel. And clearly they're looking to shine a light on the region, and that's really great. This year, the good news is we're seeing the national championships being televised on GCN and Discovery Plus, which also I think an edited TV highlight package, which is brilliant. Wrapping that all up, that will put a really, really great focus onto the Redcar and Cleveland area, and I'm sure encourage us all to get there and to get riding.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a topic we've visited again and again on this podcast, the importance of television coverage to teams, events and sponsors It was once a feature of the National Road Series, and we very much hope that it will be restored. British Cycling's first annual review of its five-year Road Ahead strategy, another topic we've covered in detail, reported 500,000 viewers from television coverage of the 2021 Championships in Lincoln, and you'd imagine that last year's numbers were even higher, given that Mark Cavendish is a bona fide superstar. Now this year, British Cycling is promising coverage on GCN+, Discovery+, and its own YouTube channel, as well as a highlights package on ITV4. Linear television, of course, offers a much broader reach, and that makes it a critical part of the package. Phil, if you were running a business in Redcar in Cleveland, what would you hope the National Road Championships would do for you?
Crowds, one hopes. Ringing tills. Hotels full. Restaurants full. Busy coffee shops. You can measure the impact of something like a road race championship in those famous terms of GVA, gross value add. And this is where the local authority can look at a point in time and go, okay, without it, the till ringing looked like this, and with it, we can generate this amount for that local economy. But of course, that's just the sort of the initial return on investment, Tim, isn't it? What they're looking at here is sort of the legacy piece, the national championships, getting more people actively traveling, more people cycling and walking, and therefore having a much greater impact on some of the longer term strategic objectives that they have around a healthier population.
Absolutely. Well, if a championships with a Tour de France winner and scores of British professionals from the men's and women's world tours doesn't provide inspiration, I don't know what will. Just a final point on the wider health of the sport before we move on. What significance do you place on the success or otherwise of a national championship among the wider challenges the sport is facing? I mean, is this a halo event that can inspire new investment, serve as a springboard for new initiatives, boost morale, all that kind of thing? Or is it simply a one-off, a holiday, if you like, where we glimpse how good things could be before returning to the reality on Monday morning of finding sponsors and, you know, racing in much lower profile events?
If the sport needed a morale booster, it's now. So this is perfectly timed, where we've had so much negativity, I think, in the past 3 to 6 months around the racing scene, the folding of teams, what does the future of the sport look like? So we really need these nationals right now, in my opinion. And I'm really encouraged by the World Tour team's presence coming for the 2023 championship. So I looked earlier that I think Ineos Grenadiers are sending 8 riders over. So that really begins to show, I think, the intent of the team, that clearly they're looking to take away possibly 2 out of these 3 jerseys, maybe all 3. So I can't recall 8 riders from Ineos being at a national championships for some time. So clearly that's a really positive indication. So is the nationals the right bellwether to assess the health of the sport? Probably not. Clearly we know there's wider issues. We've been talking about them extensively on the podcast, Tim. But at a point in time when we just need that boost, that something to put our energy and focus into, then I think the fact that we've got the nationals on the telly, we can sit on our sofas, we can watch the action unfolding with, you know, fantastic commentators, Ned Bolting, Matt Stevens and Hannah Walker. Really, really great commentary team and great racing. What's not to like?
Well, it's very much within the remit of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast to have first addressed the economic challenges and the broader significance of a national championships, especially for the host region, before turning our attention to the sporting aspects. It's kind of what we do. We hope to present the sport in a broader context. But bottom line, the National Road Championships is a sporting event, and what a sporting event. Now, we've already gained intelligence on the courses from Brother UK sponsored VeloUK.net. That, of course, is one man, Larry Higmott. And who knows more about British domestic road racing than Larry, who's been covering it for the last 20 odd years. Goodness knows how many championships Larry's seen in that time. He's witnessed victories for David Miller and Nicole Cook, Lizzie Deignan and Roger Hammond, Bradley Wiggins and Laura Kenny, and countless others. Now, Larry has already driven the road and time trial courses for the 2023 championships and gained a very clear indication of where the opportunities will arise, what type of rider is likely to succeed, all that kind of inside information. He's walked the course too in Redcar Town Centre, which must be quite a strange experience, wandering through a busy town in the middle of a working day and trying to visualise a crit race. Now, Larry, of course, has also covered each edition of the Klondike Grand Prix National Road Series event and can accurately compare that course with the course that we'll see used at the Nationals. Let's hear now from Larry.
Klondike was basically two different courses, whereas this one is just one of those courses, but it takes in two of the climbs or three of the climbs that the old course used to take in. And that's, of course, Saltburn and Skelton Green, which are the two main climbs. And then you've got a couple of drags at Busbeck and Lingdale, etc. But the thing that struck me about driving around the course and reminding myself of what was there after a couple of years away was the fact that there is a lot of descending as well. So there is space to recover depending on how bad the chases are behind the World Tour riders, who will probably light it up a bit. If we look at Lincoln, Michaelgate, there's a lot of pressure out there, but the attacking actually happens over at Balegate, which is the section that follows Michaelgate, which is a drag, but not as steep. And it could be the same with this one, like Saltburn. We might not actually see any attacking on Saltburn, but on the roads that follow it, it does drag up for quite a while afterwards, for a good mile, I guess. So there could well be a lot of attacking there. And to me, if you're going to make an attack stick, it's best for it to get in early and then use Skelton Green to increase your advantage. Because once they get to the other side of the course, like Kilnthorpe, which is on the run back to Saltburn, that's a very fast, there's a long narrow section, which is pretty flat. And then there's some steep downhill sections to Saltburn. For me, as a rider, I would have liked to have had a good gap before that. Well, having seen the way that the old Sky team used to dominate, you know, with Geraint Thomas, Peter Kenya, Bradley Wiggins, and Ian Stannard, it's very, very difficult to go hard past one of them. And I think Geraint Thomas, if he's hungry for it, which I'm guessing he will be after that disappointment in the Giro, I can see him winning both the time trial and the road race. We all saw him in the Giro. He was an amazing rider. Piper Georgie has had, I mean, she's already won the title before at Lincoln 2021. She has shown this year with a couple of UCI wins just how strong and tough she is. Anna Henderson has been in the mix. And last year, Alice Towers, she just rode away from both of them. So it's a very hard one to predict. But I think it will be, again, one of those riders who has the depth. Because on a course like this, you do need that strength in depth to last the distance on such a course.
Well, great to hear there, Phil, from Larry. He's already had boots on the ground, so to speak, in Redcar and Cleveland. Now let's talk first about the road race and a course that's hugely demanding. And the question is, I guess, is it too demanding? You know, a national championships attracts such a wide range of ability, from Grand Tour winners to glorious amateurs. It's a tricky balance, isn't it, to provide a course that will test the strongest while allowing the majority of the field to compete.
Without a doubt. If you look at the course for the 2023 road race, it's very challenging. It's lumpy. And if we look at some of the statistics that's sitting behind that, so the women will race 7 laps of the course. It's an 18.8K loop. So they will race 82 miles with approximately 2,800 metres of climbing. So if we want to put that into our money, that's 9,271 feet, which is pretty lumpy. And of course, the men's race will be 10 laps of that course, which is 117 miles with 13,300 feet of climbing within that. So that would make a very, very different race for the Nationals in 2023, which is why I think we're seeing some big squads arriving to really manage that race in a way that it's going to need to be managed. Absolutely, it's going to lend itself to a breakaway. It's going to lend itself to some attritional racing. We've got the famous climb of Saltburn Bank in there, which is a bit of a leg breaker. Only very short, at 0.3 of a kilometre, actually. It's only a short climb, but it's a power climb. You go up there at an incredible power output. And actually, when I looked on the Strava segment, Tim, just kind of who's been up there at what, you've got Steve Lampier, who obviously was riding for St. Piran, at 829 watt effort. Rory Townsend, 783 watts for 42 seconds. Connor Swift, 792 watts. Gabs Kulleg, 857 watts, and he did it in 43 seconds. So effectively, it's a 40 to 45 second effort. big, big power just to get up that. So you've got to do that in the women's race 7 times, in the men's race 10 times. So that's going to begin to make the legs sting, a bit like Lincoln, I guess, you know, going up the Michael Gate. It's going to sting. So clearly we're going to see the races probably starting out fairly easy. Then on the women's race, lap 4, lap 5, we're going to start to see that very, very punchy Saltburn Bank begin to kick in. But of course, that's not the only climb in the race. You'd think that's the only climb. It's a very, very lumpy course. So it's going to lend itself ever so well to the climbers.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Larry made the point, didn't he, that Saltburn Bank, like Michael Gate, is not a definitive climb when taken in isolation. But you ride it 10 times or even 7 times and you'll find it's a leg softener, to say the very least. He also made the point that just up the road from Saltburn Bank, there's the climb of Skelton Green. And in the same way that Michael Gate is the focus of the Lincoln Grand Prix, but isn't always the decisive section, Saltburn Bank might not define the Nationals. The drag up Hob Hill, then the steeper climb of Skelton Green, followed by a descent, you know, that might provide a more critical challenge. I wondered if you thought, Phil, that the technical nature of this course, and not just climbing, but a lot of descending too, according to Larry. I mean, it's demanding from every angle, however you consider it. I wonder if you thought that might just level the playing field. You've already mentioned this sizable squad that Ineos Grenadiers are sending. The other squad in the men's race that will be present in numbers is St. Pirin, British registered UCI Continental team. Now, they recently scored a 1-2-3 at the Lincoln Grand Prix. Jack Rootkin-Gray is winning on the continent in Team GB colours. Alexander Richardson, arguably the strongest rider in the UK this season. I mean, what do you reckon? A technical course that might level the playing field by providing plenty of opportunities to break away, a super strong domestic team to take on that super strong World Tour team? I mean, there's a fantastic race in prospect here, isn't there?
It is, Tim, and I can't call it. I really can't at the moment, because you're right, St. Piran have got 13 riders on the road, which of course gives all sorts of opportunity for them to put people up the road and to do sort of runoffs and 1-2s, you know, if they're in the breakaway, all of these sorts of things. So if they race that very, very strategically, it will be very interesting to see how that plays out when you've then got the World Tour teams normally used to controlling a race and really managing the race on their terms. And we know that the Nationals has always raced very, very differently. It's a very, very different race to racing on the continent. So I think it's going to be a very, very, very dynamic race. And honestly speaking, I can't call it at the moment. My view would be, if you're going to ask me to put my finger on it, then I think maybe Geraint Thomas will definitely be looking to take that jersey for the road race. But I don't think it's going to be easy, because when you've got capable riders like Alexander Richardson with 12 other riders sitting around him, for example, you've got a lot of options. You've got a lot of people, a lot of matches you can strike to wear out, to outmaneuver in terms of tactics. So going to be very, very interesting.
Well, you mentioned Steve Lampier a minute ago, and he, of course, will be at the wheel of the St. Pirin car. Sounds like he's recruited nearly every cyclist in Cornwall to help out for the Nationals. But you're right, this race is almost impossible to call. And the women's race, I think, offers another version of the same dynamic, a formidable contingent of World Tour professionals, and then a very strong domestic team with huge strength in numbers, this time in the form of Das Hansling, who have 10 riders named on the provisional start list. There are fantastic individual talents in the shape of Anna Henderson, in the shape of Pfeiffer Georgie, the Barnes sisters Alison Hannah, to name only the former champions. But Das Hansling will be there in numbers, as will AWOL O'Shea, as will Pro Noctis, Heidi Kjeldsen, 200 Degrees Coffee. I mean, this is going to be another hugely intriguing clash between World Tour and domestic, I think.
Absolutely. It's almost the same. I mean, if you look at what Das Hansling have got in terms of numbers, I think they've got 9 riders perhaps in the race. And again, all good riders racing regularly, not just in the UK, but on the continent. So when you've got perhaps riders like Anna Henderson coming over, clearly World Tour rider, we've seen her journey from the Tour Series right the way through to the World Tour. Absolutely fantastic. But it's just her. So, you know, she's got to rely on her engine and her positioning and her ability to be smart in the race. Whereas actually, again, you've got someone like Das Hansling with very, very capable riders in the team. People like Sammy Stewart, very, very capable, you know, somebody who can go up the road very, very easily. It's going to be something else, I think. You know, Danny Shrewsbury, the course probably lends itself very well to Danny Shrewsbury, just it being quite lumpy. I can't quite call this one at the moment. I think the road race is going to be so exciting this year. I'm planning to just be on the sofa watching them both and not really moving. I think it'll be a fantastic mop-up podcast, Tim, when we see how the tactics actually play out on the day.
So that's the road races analysed. Let's move on now to discuss the time trials. And we're doing this in an odd chronological order because, of course, it's the time trials that open the championships on Wednesday, June the 21st. So let's hear again now from Larry, who's driven the open road sections of the time trial course. He has some valuable insights on what the riders will face once they leave the pristine tarmac of the Croft Motor Racing Circuit, where the course will start and finish. Let's hear from Larry.
The time trial course is flat. I don't know what the term pan flat actually means, because this one, you know, there are little slight drags of maybe 0.5% or 1%. I did notice two railway bridges. But, you know, they're not something that probably you'd have to change gear for a lot. As Charlie Tanfield said to me, there's going to be some big chain rings in action there. I've not seen the motor racing circuit. Anyone who's been to a motor racing circuit know that they can be a little bit up and down. So I don't know how pan flat that one is. But certainly the course outside of the motor racing circuit, it looks like quite a big loop on the maps. But actually, when I was driving around it, I was around it before I knew it. The loops outside the motor races aren't that long either. I think it will be a World Tour rider that wins the time trial. I don't know what Dan's been doing outside of his normal job at Ineos. I also, you know, there's guys like James Shaw who are getting a lot of depth from their racing abroad. So from the men's point of view, I think it's going to be probably a rider from overseas, from a World Tour team. With the women's side of things, there's a lady in that race, Kate Allen, who's a mother, and she won the 10 champs last year, which I saw her do. But I've also seen her win a time trial overall in front of all the men. She is a very special time trialist. So she is, for me, a possibility of winning that time trial from a domestic point of view. But then again, you've got riders like Piper, Anna Henderson, and that could well be there.
Well, more good stuff there from Larry Phil. If railway bridges represent the extent of the climbing on the open road sections of this course, then it seems like fast and flat is an accurate description. Now, a lot's been made, not least by British Cycling, about the speed of this course. It's going to be, to quote Jonathan Day, a real tester's course. It's one for the big engines, and we heard from Larry that Charlie Tanfield thinks it's going to be one for big chain rings too. I just wondered if it's also going to be a course that will favour riders with a fully optimised aero package. You know, aerodynamics, it's almost the dominant theme in professional cycling these days, isn't it? Particularly in time trials. And it's another area, Phil, where Britain is a world leader. We have Simon Smart of Drag20 working at the Mercedes F1 facility in Brackley. British Cycling has inherited Chris Boardman's state-of-the-art wind tunnel. Matt Bottrell is an aero consultant to Lotto Destiny. And the former World Hour record holder Dan Bigham is an aero consultant to Ineos Grenadiers. I mean, what do you think? Is this fast, flat course the perfect canvas for all of that aero expertise?
Undoubtedly it will. A completely pan-flat course. So let's sort of break that down then. It starts and finishes on the Croft Motor Racing Circuit. And the women will do two laps of the course, which will end up at 27.4 kilometres, which is 17 miles. And the men will do three laps of the course, which is 41.1 kilometres, 25.53 miles. So slightly longer than we would normally perhaps be looking at, certainly for the men when we're looking at time trials. It's not a 10 and it's not a 25 miler. However, you've only got to look at the tradition of time trialing in the UK. No wonder we're developing all the world expertise. And obviously, Dan Bigham, clearly now the man on the inside of Ineos Grenadiers. So no doubt setting up all the riders there to ensure that they're completely optimized on the day. And of course, Dan himself, one of our most competent time trialists and an aerodynamicist by trade. Not only is he advising the Ineos Grenadiers on how slippery they need to be through the air, he no doubt will be keeping a little something up his own sleeve in order that he can put a good performance in. And without a doubt, in my view, Dan will still be in the top three riders, regardless of what the outcome is on the day.
The other perspective that you can apply, I guess, to this so-called tester's course is that there's nowhere to hide. If you've got the legs, you've got the legs, you know, aerodynamics or not. Riders like John Archibald, Hayley Simmons, They won't be competing on road bikes, of course, but they certainly won't be operating with the resources of INEOS Grenadiers. Isn't this a course that gives them a fighting chance as well?
If you have the engine on a flat course, the Race of Truth, you're in the mix. But I guess when you're looking at the prospect of World Tour riders coming off the back of something like the Giro with the engines and the fitness that they must have, that does put them in a slightly different category, in my opinion. So not demeaning at all any of the capabilities of our UK time trial specialists. But when you've got the equipment and you've got the expertise and you've got the engine, that's a pretty formidable package that you're bringing to the Nationals in 2023. So without a doubt, somebody from INEOS, I'm sure, will win this one. And interestingly, I noted in the women's that Joss Loudon is not on the start list. Now, Joss, arguably one of our most capable time trialists and, of course, a former national champion and partner in crime to Dan Bigham. I think that kind of opens the gates up a little bit, actually, for somebody new. Very, very interesting there. I know Anna Henderson is obviously a very, very competent time trialist. Again, you know, she's here on her own, but she's got the kit. She's got the capability, the engine, the racing in her legs. You've also got Eleanor Baxted, very similar sort of setup, but incredibly powerful and strong rider. So I think on the women's, it's a toss up between those two, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, either of the Baxted sisters could get the job done. Then you've got Olympic and Paralympic champions like Katie Archibald, Eleanor Barker, Dame Sarah Story. It's going to be a fascinating competition. Anna Henderson, I think, is probably the most intriguing factor of all. I mean, does anybody know, even now, what type of rider Anna is? Time trialing is just one of her many strengths. British champion, of course, in 2021 and Commonwealth Games silver medalist last year. But she's a force in the classics too. I remember, Phil, you and I watched her win her first round of the Tour Series at Wembley Park back in 2018. And back then, everybody thought she was going to be a sprinter. But she was very keen to avoid being pigeonholed and was careful to reject that label. Fast forward a few months and we watched her win the Rydale Grand Prix, this brutally hard race in North Yorkshire. I mean, she really can do it all. Anyway, two very intriguing time trials in prospect.
And let's not forget Pfeiffer Georgie, very, very strong rider and a bit of an outsider. What about Emily Meakin? Remember Emily Meakin? Very, very strong time trialist. We haven't heard a lot from her lately. I wonder if she's doing a little bit of secret training and she's going to turn up and really smash some big watts out. We'll see.
Well, it's that kind of event, the National Championships, as you say, very different to the rest of the season. We tend to apply that analysis to the road race, but could it also apply to the time trial? Who knows? We will definitely find out.
We will see. Again, another one where I'm just going to be pinned on the sofa. It's take the day off of work. For the time trial, the under-23s is going in the morning, Tim, isn't it? So the men roll out at 9 o'clock in the morning, the under-23s, the women at 10:15, and of course the elites will go in the afternoon, women at 12:50 and men at 14:10. So make sure you book your days off, you get your sofas ready, and all the provisions that you need to stay wired in for the racing.
Well, let's move on to discuss the circuit race. And I have to say, Phil, this is the event that I'm looking forward to the most. Like time trialing, crit racing is a quintessentially British discipline. When you think of the squads that we've had, you know, from Rafa Condor through to Wiv Sungod, that Team Breeze squad led by Jess Roberts, do you remember them back in 2019? All the way through to Pro Noctis. I mean, the bar has just been raised higher and higher and higher. Now, needless to say, Larry's reconnaissance of Redcar and Cleveland included the course for the circuit race, even though barriers would have been notably absent. So let's hear again now from Larry on the challenges that await the riders in Redcar Town Centre and, critically, on its esplanade.
The crit course, yes, I did walk it, but as I've said in my previews, without knowing what the barrier line is, it's difficult to know just how complex the race will be. But unlike a lot of races, which always have a feature in them, whether it's cobbles, whether it's a really narrow section, chicane section, whatever, this one is very fast. There's 90 degree bends, certainly the one after the finish line, which is tightish, but the rest of the bends are not too bad. There's nothing that falls back on itself. There's no hairpins, providing, of course, I walked the right course because some of the streets weren't named. But from what I can see, and I did look at the maps pretty hard to make sure I was on the right course, it looks like a very fast course. My favourites are people like Lewis Askey and Sam Watson, who showed last year when they were up there how good they were at that sort of racing. And with another season in Europe in their legs, they're likely to be a bit stronger. But then again, Matt Bostock's also been racing in Europe, who won it last year. They're the favourites for me, and they're certainly in the men's race. In the women's race, it'll be interesting to see how the likes of Emma Jeffers, who was second to Josie last year, and Josie's not in this one, how she gets on, whether she can actually go one better and pull on the jersey.
More valuable insights there from Larry Phil. 90 degree bends, yes, but not hairpins this year. Ian Watson, the manager of Hutchinson Brother UK, will doubtless be disappointed. I know that Ian loves a hairpin. Now, sadly, through nobody's fault, we've been deprived of a tour series this year. So the domestic teams will have to reacclimatise as well as the World Tour riders. And they might have to acclimatise in a literal sense if the wind blows in off the North Sea onto Redcar Esplanade. I mean, could we witness, Phil, that rarest of sightings, echelons, in a crit race?
Yeah, we'll see. We will see. It's 1 kilometre long, almost like a 1 kilometre dead long course. There's 16 turns in it, and the riders will race for 55 minutes plus 5 laps. I think wind direction will be quite important, and I'm sure all the teams will be studying the meteorological applications the day of the race and determining their strategies, and certainly the teams with the numbers. If there is an opportunity, if there's a headwind, for example, on that straight, then it could be advantageous to them and it could play into their hands. We will see. So, yeah, exciting times, Tim. The whole thing looks like a really, really exciting package for 2023.
Agreed, 100%. Well, we heard earlier from Jonathan Day, British Cycling Sport and Participation Director, when we were discussing what might be described as the strategic aims of the championships, but he's also hands-on with the course design and implementation. So let's hear a bit more from Jonathan, this time specifically on the mechanics of the course for the National Circuit Race Championships.
The circuit race is actually relatively straightforward. It's a kilometre or so, fully barriered. Once you've got the permissions to close roads and to start putting closures in, when you manage that really, really well, the actual setting up of the course is actually a lot more straightforward. You're fully barriering and you're creating a more sterile field of play than what you might do so in a time trial or a road race. So you can tweak barrier lines and just start to think about the racing lines that you want to achieve, depending on the racing dynamics that you're looking for. That gets really interesting, actually, and there's some opportunity with the space that we've got in around that circuit to make that quite interesting, I think. The circuit last year was great in Kakubri, but it was pretty tight in places, whereas this year it's quite technical, but at the same time there's enough space for riders at quite a few points on that course to be able to move up and to recover as well. The wind will be interesting, and I think that will play its part, which in itself brings its own dynamic, because how it's raced on the day can be very different to maybe what riders were looking at the day before or on the morning of that day. It can change. So I just think it'll be really interesting.
Well, more great insights there from Jonathan Phil. We talked earlier about the circuit race being a feature of the national championships since 2021, when previously it was a standalone event. I wonder if you felt that including it alongside the time trial and the road race had boosted its status, so to speak, you know, raised its credibility. And what stronger evidence could we have for that than the presence of World Tour riders? Luke Rowe and Josh Tarling from Ineos Grenadiers, Lewis Askey and Sam Watson from Groupama FDJ. I mean, these are riders with professional contracts to fulfil when this championships is over. A circuit race, as we know, is a high-risk discipline. Staying upright is never a certainty. And of course, it's only 2 days before the National Road Race, which, you know, you would imagine that Sam Watson will fancy, having finished as runner-up last year. So do you think that the status of the humble circuit race is on the rise? Is it being taken more seriously?
Well, I think the fact that it's within the overall championships really just sets the scene about whether people would take that seriously or not. The fact that it's in the national championship, I think, gives people that choice. If it was held, I think, on its own, we'd probably see less World Tour riders coming over to win the crit racing jersey, because, of course, very little of that exists in their professional life, and they probably have very few opportunities to wear the jersey. So we know crit racing is just a very, very different style of racing. It's in the red from the get-go. It's fast, it's dangerous, it's tactical, it's everything. So again, very, very different style of racing. It's long efforts, max intervals. If we remember, with Sun God, who have now folded, were really the masters of the crit racing scene in the UK. They built a really phenomenal crit racing team. And of course, when Matt Bostock became crit racing champion, then, of course, he'd come off of a back of a really, really big block of crit racing with people at least like the Tour Series and, of course, the National Circuit Championships, etc. So Matt Bostock this year doesn't really have the same numbers around him. I'd love to see Matt retain the jersey. I really would. It would be fantastic for him, I think, for that to happen. But of course, you need a team around you with crit racing to be really successful. So I'm just looking at who's got the big numbers. St. Piran, again, got a fairly big squad there. Looks like about 8 riders in that particular squad there. And Trinity Racing, never to be underestimated. Of course, Trinity often developing the future World Tour stars, you know, with a direct route straight into World Tour teams. So they've got 5 riders in the race and they tend to always be competitive at a Tour Series. Trinity, they're always up there and often take a sneaky win. So let's not write them off. Very, very interesting. You've got Luke Rowe there and Josh Tarling. Don't know whether Luke Rowe's just going to go in there and just try and mix things up a bit and dish a few pain lessons out to a few people. We'll see, but wouldn't it be fantastic for Luke Rowe to be walking away with that jersey? So could we predict Ineos Grenadiers taking every single jersey from the Nationals? Ooh, wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah, wouldn't it just? I mean, I had an object lesson many years ago, Phil, in the strength of World Tour riders in crit races when I watched Ian Stannard lap the entire field for the London Nocturne in 2013. And I'd interviewed Ian a couple of days earlier and he said, well, you know, it's been a few years since I've ridden a crit. He lapped the entire field. Alex Dowsett achieved the same feat 2 years earlier. So yeah, my advice, discount a World Tour rider in a crit race at your peril. Phil, thank you very much indeed for joining me today and for sharing your insights. We are in for an amazing National Road Championships. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It starts, as we say, this Wednesday, June the 21st, with the time trials. It resumes 2 days later on Friday the 23rd with the circuit races, and it climaxes this Sunday, June the 25th, with the road races. Thank you very much, everybody out there, for listening. Be sure to follow at VeloUK and at AussieLarry on Twitter during these championships, and of course, follow at Brothers Cycling. We're on all 3 channels. Be sure too to tune in to the television coverage on GCN Plus, Discovery Plus and ITV4. British Cycle Sport needs television coverage. And to justify that, it needs viewers. So play your part, book your seat on the sofa and enjoy this wonderful National Road Championships.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.